So we're in Jonah chapter 2. So I invite you to turn there, and I'm going to give you a little bit of reminder of where we were last week so that you can kind of follow what's happening this week. So Jonah, this guy, he's kind of the reluctant prophet. The way he's described earlier is, he's described as a great prophet of God when you go back into the Old Testament. And then, of course, you have this story breaking in the book of Jonah where what God wants him to do is go to a people that he doesn't really like at all. And he wants him to share a message with them that's going to be a message of forgiveness and hope. And Jonah's like, I mean, it's not like I'm curious what it is you're asking me to do. I'm just not going to do it. And some of us, we can probably stop right there and say, I resonate with that guy. There are certain parts of obedience that just come very easy and very naturally for me. And then there are other parts that don't. For those parts that come very easily, I am glad to do that. And for those parts that are very difficult, that's a box. And I prefer to stay right in where I'm at because what you're asking me to do is pretty uncomfortable. Have you ever been there before spiritually? Now, again, just as a reminder, when God tells Jonah, hey, I want you to go and preach forgiveness to the Ninevites, we need to remember that the Ninevites were a pretty despicable people. They were violent, and they were torturous. They were one of the greatest, at least in terms of empires, that the world had ever known. But the way that they had accrued that power was by means that none of us would ever try to justify. They were vicious not only to men, they were vicious to women. And not only were they vicious to women, they were vicious to children. And the other thing that we know is that the group that they maybe hated the most were the Israelites. And so you've got this guy named Jonah who's like, okay, so these people, if you gave them the opportunity, they would want to take over my people. And now what you want me to do is to go into this place where they don't like me. Probably if they had their way, they would kill me as soon as I walk into it. This is your great plan. And God's answer was, yep, that's the great plan. And for some of us, what we have to kind of come to grips with is this, is that when God has given us a specific assignment, he's given us a specific task, it's not our job to kind of hand this off to somebody else in hopes that they'll pick it up and they'll carry it. It's our job to hear and to go. It's our job to hear and to go. So what he's not asking Jonah to be here is to kind of be, you know, somewhat committed to him. He's asking Jonah to put his very life into his hands and to say, and as you go, trust that I'm going to go before you. Now that, and this is where I say, on a totally human level, and you'll hear me say that over and over again, on a totally human level, I get Jonah, don't you? On a totally human level, I get it. These people will probably kill me. On the other hand, he has so much hate stored up in his heart toward that group that on the flip side, what Jonah is saying is, I don't know that I want them to know you. I just hate them. And in fact, I would prefer maybe hold this message into myself because at the end of the day, I just want them to suffer. I want them to suffer like everybody else that's been around them has had to suffer. I want them to know what that is like. All of this is probably what's going on in the heart of Jonah. And yet, God has said what? I want you to go. Now, here's where we left off with this last week. The way that we left off is Jonah had decided to go, but the other way. And he didn't just disobey like in somewhat of a way. He like goes 1,500 miles in the complete opposite direction. Well done, guy. I mean, when you're going to disobey, he's all in, right? So he heads out and he goes to another place. He finds a ship that is ready for him, which in probably in his own mind, he's sitting there going, this is convenient. And off he goes. And as they go out into the sea really starts to build up. All of the sailors are there going, oh my gosh, this is not good. How do we get out? They're all praying to as many gods as they possibly can, just hoping that they hit the lottery with getting one of them right. Jonah, the great prophet of God, is downstairs taking a cat nap when he could have been up there with the sailors saying, this is who God is, and I'm now going to pray to him and lead you to him. It's not what he did. And so what happens to Jonah? Once they find out that he is the cause of the problems that are around them, on the one hand, they say, oh, we can't throw this guy out into the water, you know, which seems like a compassionate and kind thing to do. But then ultimately, what do? Whoop, and off the ship he goes. He goes out into the water, and then the waters start to calm. And you go, oh, good. That was a lot of drama for one chapter, don't you think? And then it says this in chapter 1, verse 17. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah. So right when the water starts to calm a little bit, then you got the story of the great fish. Now, some of you might think it's a whale. It doesn't actually say that. It just says a great fish. We particularly like Jaws here, and so that's why we went with the theme that we went with here. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah. Now, Jonah had just survived a terrible storm, and so why would God do something like this to him? I mean, why pile it on? It seems like the storm has been enough, and now you got big fish stories happening. Well, the answer is Jonah still isn't paying attention. Now, this is what we need to remember. On the one hand, we look at it and say, God, that storm, that was a beating. And you go, yeah, absolutely. And we see the storm. Some of us see the storm as Jonah's getting his comeuppance, right? I mean, God kind of got to the place where he was fed up with the dude. And he goes, fine, I'm going to put a storm on top of your head and see how you like that and just kind of pound you. And some of us see that that's exactly how God is. That's the way that we view him. When in fact, the storm was an act of mercy. The whole point of the storm was to get and to arrest his attention, and it doesn't work. And so why big fish? And the answer is because he's still not paying attention. That's why. So both the storm and the fish, they're not meant to be mean. They're meant to be acts of mercy. And the same thing is true of many of us. God is trying to get our attention. The question is what does it take to get our attention? Now, ideally, what we would say is we're going to very quickly and we're going to very openly kind of yield ourselves to him. But I think for a lot of us, we take kind of, if we're honest and we look at ourselves, we go, I look at the way I think, I look at the way I act. Yeah, I'm not there. I'm just not there yet. And in that sense, we can be a lot like Jonah. And here's the way the story goes on. In chapter 2, verse 1, it says, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now think about that. That's not good. I mean, imagine being in the belly of a fish for 3 days and three nights. The temperature probably would have been pretty hot. The space probably would have been a little cramped. I mean, it's not like what God did is he put a hotel into the room of the belly of the fish so that Jonah could check in and have a nice stay. Instead, it's probably really hot. It's probably cramped. Every time the great fish is going to get some snacks, that's all bathing over him. And then, of course, you just have the basic stomach juices that are going over this guy. Now, have you ever thought about that? I mean, by the time he gets out of this fish, it's probably something like his skin has probably changed colors because of the acid that has washed over him. And Jonah's probably sitting there going, suppose I do go into Nineveh, I am not going to look good here. As a matter of fact, he's probably going to look like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings series before this thing is over with. You know, and I'm going to be the great messenger. There's hardly going to be anything left of me. So here's how Jonah responds in 2:1. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. So Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. Now I want to be fair here. Some scholars really debate how long was he in the belly of the fish before he started praying. One would suggest that he was praying kind of all along, but others would look at this little transition here. It says, and then. So, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights, and then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. Think about it. So after 3 days, he decides to pray. Now that's stubborn if that's true. I mean, that's hardcore. But remember, all he had to do, when you think about it, all he had to do was to go share God with the Ninevites. That's it. There's the other side of the coin. So he's like, all right, so I'm in the belly of the fish. I don't particularly enjoy that. The other option is I follow God and I go and I preach the message to the Ninevites. And so I don't really like that. So what's the third option here? And the answer is there's not a third option. There's not a third option. It's either obedience or it is disobedience. Those are your choices. So even though Jonah was a great prophet, even still, he says, this is too far for God to ask me to go. Now, here's the question, friends. Have you ever gotten to a place in your life where what God has asked you to do, you have looked at him and said, that is too far for you to ask me to go? Have you ever been there? For some, it can look like a financial sacrifice. God has asked, I want you to give up this, and here's where I want you to go. But God, I mean, that standard of living, I've kind of come accustomed to that. I still want you to go. For some, it's you take a look at maybe even career, and you say, I'm looking at the career, and what my career is costing me is my family. And God says, the first institution that I created is family, And so I want you to take a hard look at your career and your family and see which one is winning out here. And then I want you to reassess your priorities. Well, that may be too far of a place for you to ask me to go. We can do this all morning if we want to. I'm just trying to get the pump primed a little bit and ask, what are those places in your heart that you've told God you don't tread on it? And when we do that, what I want you to remember is, in that moment, I want you to say, I am Jonah. Right then, I am Jonah. I'm no different than him. But here's the way the text goes on. If you look at verses 3 and 4, it says, you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All of your waves and your billows passed over me, and then I said, I am driven away from your sight. It's interesting, because if you go back into chapter 1, it says that Jonah turns his face away from the Lord. He turns his face away. And all this language, when it says he turns his face away from the Lord, it means he's literally walking away from the blessings of God to pursue his own ends. That's what he's doing. So in chapter 1, it's he turns his face away from the Lord, and now Jonah is saying, I'm driven away from your sight. You think he's starting to feel what it's like to not really have God's blessing in his life? And if the answer in your head is yes, then you're connecting with those verses. And so the way it goes on in verses 5 and 6 are like this. He says, the waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed me up forever. And all of this language is meant to say something. Jonah is really starting to figure some things out. He's figuring it out. What he's starting to figure out is it's not worth it. He's not totally there, don't get me wrong, but he's starting to figure out this isn't worth it. So the great prophet realizes how far he's gone away from God. And again, before we beat up on him, we need to remember we're the same way. We need to look at these people in the Bible and you say, why does God leave their story in there? They're great heroes and they're just a train wreck. And the answer is because you can be a great hero for God all the while knowing that you're a train wreck too. No different from him. He's a train wreck, yeah. But I also want to be careful on the flip side. Be careful about coming down on people because they find God in a time like this. It's like they can't win. They can't win. So on the one hand, you know, we want to say, yeah, you know, such and so was caught. And Chuck Colson said the same thing when he worked for Nixon. And he was starting to have these stirrings in his heart. And this is before all of the scandals started to, all the Watergate scandals started to break. And he was one of Nixon's right-hand men. And he said, the Lord was really reaching me. I was finding him. And it's interesting, when in his book, Born Again, what he said was, but I didn't want to say anything to anybody because as everything was starting to go down and everything was starting to go public, here's what I knew people would say. Oh, sure, now he wants Jesus in his life. We've got to be very careful here. One of the ways that we find Jesus is because we fully live out what's happened to us as we've walked away from him. We got to leave the room in here for these people to be human. And we also have to leave the space in there for this. And it's to realize that our putting our lives apart for God is a process just like this guy. Just like this guy. For some, it's not a question in your mind that God is telling you there's a part of your life that is keeping you away from me. And I want you to give that up. For some of you, it's just a relationship. They're not bringing you any closer to Jesus. They're turning your face away from Jesus. And then as you kind of live it out and kind of the mess that it brings to your life, we need to be thinking about Jonah. And if, especially if you sit there and struggle and you go, yep, so I'm 2 more months into this relationship. I'm further away than I was before. I want you to remember, Jonah's here for 3 days. 3 days before he starts going, you know, I'm having some aha moments here. You ever had those? So on the one hand, be careful about coming down on people because they find God in a time like this. Here's what I say. I'm thankful they found God. I'm thankful that they found God. On the other hand, let's be honest with ourselves. How many times have we asked God to get us out of something? Probably like what Jonah's thinking as he's in the fish's belly, right? I'd really, really like to get out of this. How many times have we asked God to get us out of something, and once we're out of it, we go right back to what we were doing before, and then what we do is we indicate that we didn't need God to begin with. Have you ever done that before? I didn't really need you. Now, of course, you're in the belly of the fish for 3 days, and you're like, help! But then you get out, and you're like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Ever been there spiritually before? Here's the thing. On a certain level, I want to say something that I agree with. Depending on the life we want for ourselves, we don't need God for it. Depending on the life that we want for ourselves, we don't need God for it. In fact, God is directly in the way of it. which is why we don't have any use for God. He doesn't fit. He doesn't fit. This is what I want for life. And he doesn't fit. And so in that sense, he's not really useful for me. But when he's useful for me, then I'll go to him. Now think about that. That's the way a lot of us work. But the way that the story goes on in chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, and you see this awesome little transition for Jonah. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, Lord. You brought up my life from the pit. And when my life was fading away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you, which means basically God heard it, into your holy temple. So Jonah goes from the situation is bad, it's like really bad, to you brought me out of the pit. And think about it, folks. He's saying this while he's still in the fish. You've brought me out of the pit. He's not out yet. Leonard Sweet wrote a book some years ago called Soul Salsa. I don't know how many of you have ever read it, but let me read something from it for you. He tells of an unusual tribal custom that pictures God's presence during our darkest hours. Let me quote him. One tribe of Native Americans had a unique practice for training young braves. On the night of a boy's 13th birthday, he was placed in a dense forest to spend the entire night alone. Until then, he had never been away from the security of his family and his tribe. But on this night, he was blindfolded. He was taken miles away. And when he took off the blindfold, he was in the middle of thick woods by himself all night long. Every time a twig snapped, he probably visualized a wild animal ready to pounce. Every time an animal howled, he imagined a wolf leaping out of the darkness. Every time the wind blew, he wondered what more sinister sound it was really masking. No doubt it was a terrifying night for many of those boys. Here's what Leonard Sweet went on to say, and I quote him. After what seemed like an eternity, the first rays of sunlight entered the interior of the forest. Looking around, the boy saw flowers, trees, and the outlining of a path. And then, to his utter astonishment, he beheld the figure of a man standing just a few feet away, armed with a bow and an arrow. It was the boy's father, and he had been there all night long. This is the story that Jonah is starting to figure out. That while he is in the throes of the belly of a fish, God has actually been with him all night long. And right in the middle of this book, you see chapter 2, verse 8. It's almost perfectly in the middle of the book. And it says this, those who pay regard to vain idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. Let me read that again. Those who pay regard to vain idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. So here's the question, who struggles with idolatry? And the answer that Jonah gives is everybody. We all do. Tim Keller, he wrote a book called Counterfeit Gods, and in it he was talking about idols, and he said, what is an idol? It's anything more important to you than God. Anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God. Anything that you seek to give you what only God can really give you. That's what you're really worshiping. What was Jonah's idol, since we're talking about Jonah? I don't know that there's just one. There can be multiple, and it's the same for me, and it's the same for you. Here's one. One of his idols could have been his nationalism. He's looking at his people, and he sees these people, the Assyrians, that are basically their capital is Nineveh, and he sees them as them, and we're us. And since you're them, I'm not worried about you knowing God. When you get to a place in your heart that you hate somebody so much that all you want to see is for them to suffer and for them to not know God, it's just gone too far. And that's exactly where it had gone for Jonah. He so hated them that his desire for them wasn't not only to not know God, but for them to be destroyed by him. So when you turn to an idol, what is Jonah trying to tell us? You forfeit the grace that could be yours. You forfeit it. You give it up. Keller goes on in Counterfeit Gods, and he says we have four possible responses to the idols that we have in our life. Here's one. One is you can blame the idol for the situation that you're in. That's one possibility. We're pretty good at that stuff. right? I mean, one of the things that we're really, really good at is identifying somebody else that we can drop the blame on. We could look at the idol and go, man, if it weren't for the idol. That's one way. Here's another. Another thing that you could do is say, I'm going to go on the other side, and this is going to make me look a little bit better, at least in the eyes of God. I'm just going to blame myself, and I'm just going to keep it there. And that sounds, at least on the face of it, reasonable. Another possibility is we could just blame all the brokenness of the world, since we're just here looking for blame. Or the other thing that we can do, Keller says, is we can turn it over to God. We can hand it to him. So how did Jonah respond? In chapter 2, verse 9, he says, as for me, and that's maybe something we need to underline, as for me, I'll sacrifice to you with a voice of thanksgiving. I will fulfill what I have vowed. Salvation belongs to the Lord. And you go, oh man, good. He's there. Well, I think there are different ways that we can see our relationship with God. Let me give you a couple of those. A couple weeks ago, I was at a thing called Theology on Tap. Some of you were there. It was down in Houston, where it's kind of a stump the panel night. So the people could text in questions. They could ask any question that they wanted to the panel. I really enjoyed being a part of that. I was asked this question by an atheist when it was over with. He came up and he said, what I don't understand is he says, I'm basically a good person. I'm really not that bad. And so I'm trying to figure out why it is that, you know, if I died like this, that I can't have a relationship with God. And I said, well, you're an atheist, so by definition, you don't have a relationship with God. You've already said you know that he doesn't exist. So what's the relationship there? That's one thing that we would need to think about. I said, and that's also assuming something else. And it's that I let you get away with a huge assumption. The assumption that you said is that I'm basically a good person. Basically a good person. If we really take a measure of the way that we think, the way that we act, and so forth, like we're really honest with ourselves, we check our motives about things, maybe what we'll find is that we're not as good as we think we are. Maybe the assessment about ourselves is just a little bit inflated. That's one possibility. I said, but I also want to maybe spin it in another way so that you'll get it. Suppose that you have the very best apple pie that has ever been made, and I only put a touch of arsenic in it. Are you going to eat it? And he said, absolutely not. And I said, okay, then you get it more than you think. You get it more than you think. See, some of us want to make that assessment. See, I'm not that bad, and so I don't see why I can't have this thing with God, even though, on the other hand, I'm doing nothing to relate to him whatsoever. It's probably not the best way to go. I think another way of seeing it is best indicated by something Jerry Bridges said some years ago. He said, our worst days are never so bad that you're beyond the reach of God's grace. And man, isn't that true? Our worst days are never so bad that you're beyond the reach of God's grace. And your best days are never so good that you're beyond the need of God's grace. And isn't that true? See, what we have to see is, in the rest of the book of Jonah, once he's spit out of the belly of the fish, he's committed to doing God's will. And you go, man, I mean, I'm glad to see that out of you, Jonah. But we also see it because, at least early on, because he doesn't want to be fish food again. You see what I'm saying? He doesn't want to be fish food anymore. He still hates the Ninevites. He's angry at God for asking him to help them. He's not there. So what you have, it's almost like a 17-year-old whose father has said, okay, son, I want you to mow the yard. And he's like, but hold on. Me and my friends, we have this thing planned where we got the next 6 hours committed to like this group thing of Fortnite. You know, and the dad is like, yeah, but the catch is for the next, I don't know how long it takes you to do the yard, that's what you're going to do. Have you ever had those moments with your dad or, right? You're about to mow the yard. This way, dad. Now here's the thing. Dad wins, right? And the next thing you see, you look out and the kid's out there mowing the yard. But as the kid is mowing the yard, he's like burning holes through the window at his dad. Now here's the thing. The yard is getting mowed. What is missing? And the answer is the heart. It's the heart. And Jonah, at least for right now in the story, there's more to come. But at least right now in the story, once he gets spit out of the fish, and he says, fine, I'm going to go to Nineveh. That's exactly how he says it. He is the 17-year-old kid that feels like he's missing out on something because he's missing the Fortnite time when he's mowing the yard and honoring his father. You get it yet? His heart isn't there. Yard got mowed. Heart wasn't there. So it's not just compliance that God is after here. It's not it. What he wants is for us to have the same passion and love for other people that he's got for them and for us to see them as worth it. It's worth it. So from beginning to end, Here's the thing about Christianity. It's a story of sacrifice from the beginning to the end. It begins with Jesus on the cross, and it ends with us bearing a cross. And that means that some things have to go. It's not just your actions that he's after. It's your heart that he's after. Question, folks, where's your heart? Where's your heart? I want to give you an opportunity this morning. And for Hugh, if he would come and just lead us in a song, we want to give you a chance. Maybe it's a chance where you're at and you just spend some time praying to the Lord, that you've seen yourself for who you truly are, and you see him for who he truly is, and you know that his grace is more. His grace is more. Maybe what you need is for somebody to pray with you and to pray over you. The staff, we're going to be down front. We want you to come. We're here to help you. Maybe you need to go to these prayer rails and just to lay it before God. Lay it before God and say, what is going on here is going to be left here. And what happens when I walk out is my life is changed for you. That's what this time is about. So I'm going to lead us in a time of prayer. We're going to be up front. Please come. Thank you, Lord, for somebody like Jonah. The honesty in the story, I think if we're paying attention, we're a lot like this guy. And what I pray, Lord, is that by your grace, we can get past it. We can get past hate. We can get past whatever idol we're worshiping that keeps us from really worshiping you. I pray, God, that we can see that your grace is enough and that what you've portioned for us is a life beyond anything that we could ever ask or imagine. I think we all agree with C.S. Lewis. We're too easily entertained. We're just too easily entertained. And I pray, God, that what we can do is we can drop the trinkets at the ground and we can take you for what you're fully worth. That's our prayer. We pray it in Jesus' name today. Amen.